Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And welcome to day 4 of Guitar Nerd's Gear of the Year 2017. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Oh, God.
Jay Cross.
Yeah.
And Joe Branton.
Oh, hi.
I was looking at the list that we're about to go over and just laughed because I was like, I can see exactly where it's going to end up.
After
what is going on?
After yesterday's very exciting, showdown.
Jay Cross threatened us all with a knife after he went off air.
He did. He cut me in many places.
Listen,
it's painful.
Here and here.
You signed the waiver when you walked into the house.
So what we did yesterday, we were going to be doing 2017's best gear of 2016 as well, but the pedal conversation took so long that actually we're going to do this.
I think it's nice that you use the word conversation.
Yeah, it is a conversation.
It went away from conversation towards the end. It actually was.
When does a conversation become an argument? That's my...
When Joe Brennan walks into the room.
Hello. Yeah.
God, he's steaming drunk. It's unbelievable. Three categories to tackle tonight then. 2017's best gear of 2016. Best accessory and best bass thing. Now, I think... Because when we're recording this, obviously we've just recorded yesterday's episode. Not to spoil the magic, but we're not doing these every day. We're doing them in one long
hit.
We're
actually waking up in the morning before work and recording them.
Yeah, yeah, right. I think we need to blow off some steam by doing 2017's best gear of 2016. Because these guitars don't go through to the final. Or these items don't go through to the final round this year. And we've got a huge long list of basically everything that was on Gear of the Year last year. I propose to blow off a little bit of steam to get some energy back in the room is we just say yes or no.
Energy.
Does it stay on the list or does it not stay on the list?
Yep.
So I'm going to run down the list and I want you guys to...
So what are we doing? We're cutting down to a top five again.
Exactly. Okay. Cut down to a top five and then we can...
I can't remember what the top five was last year. In fact, I'm not going to look.
No, don't let
don't
it...
Look. Don't look. Yeah.
Don't want it to sully my...
Oh, what? Are we just saying a random yes or no without knowing the product?
Yeah, no, okay. That's not what we're doing. For people who don't know, by the way, 2017's best gear of 2016 is us looking back on what we gave awards last year and...
Was it the top two of every category?
I think it's the top... No, because I think it's the top five of every category.
It is.
And so what we'll do is we'll go through those and we'll just basically say yes or no. So these are the things that won awards last year. Do they hold up this year? Should we have given them an award or not? So it's going to be quick fire. We're going to cut them. I'm going to actually delete them from the spreadsheet, which is, you know, crazy.
We didn't give them an award last year, though. They just, not all of them.
They ended up in the top five last year.
Yeah, okay,
for their respective categories. So I'm going to go through, I'm going to say a thing, and I need there's three of you, so I need at least two yeses to keep it on.
Okay.
So, Reverend Billy Corgan.
No.
No.
Whoa.
Cold. Gretsch Streamline.
Are you not getting involved in this?
I mean, I kind of feel like I can veto if I need to, and I sort of think I should do for the big Billy Corgan because it was our best guitar last year, I think.
Maybe we should leave the top ones in there.
Nice, because it's too difficult to do that now. We should have thought it through at the time.
I can't change it.
No, I just mean I don't know if we can do that because I don't think it's quite as easy as that, is it?
The one at the bottom, I think we added in last minute.
Yeah, so okay, I'm gonna leave it to you guys.
Okay. I think that's fair. Then it means there's no stalemate. And also could throw some curveballs in there.
Joe Brandon's messing with the spreadsheet. Leave it alone. So, right, Reverend Billy Corgan.
No.
No.
Yes.
It's gone. Gretsch Streamliner Double Cut.
No.
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 Gone. Music Man Cutlass.
No.
Yes.
No. That's gone. PRS-CE24.
No.
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 It's gone. Fender American Offset Telecaster.
Yes.
No.
No. No.
Outrageous.
Blimey. Boss Katana 50.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Honey Boy 5 Watt.
Yes.
No.
No.
Gone. DV Mark Gen 15.
Yes.
No.
Gone. Fender Bass Breaker 007.
Yes.
Staying. PV6505 Piranha.
No.
No.
Gone. Echoline Roadrunner.
Yes. No.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. No. Yes. No, I'm kidding. Yes, obviously.
T-Rex Replicator.
Yes. No.
Yes.
Wait, that was two yeses. Okay, Walrus 385 Overdrive.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Staying. X5 Golden Brownie.
Yes.
Yes.
Two Notes LeClean.
No. Yes.
Yes.
Staying. Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5.
No.
No.
Big no. Boss BC1X.
No.
I don't even know what that is.
It's the bass compressor.
Oh, who, no.
I've got it on my board.
He said chorus.
Oh, yeah, compressor.
It's a compressor. Gone. No. Mark Bass Nano Mark 300.
No. No.
Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor.
No.
Fender Flea Jazz Bass.
No.
Rockstock Bright Switch.
No.
No. No.
Barefoot Buttons.
No.
Yes.
Jay?
Yes, actually, Jay. Yeah.
Boss ES5.
No.
No.
Oh, it's, Matt said no, it's gone. Blake Apex Guitar Case.
No. No.
Gone. Strymon Zuma.
Yes.
No. No.
Gone. Ernie Ball. Why is the James Valentine? Oh, because that's the...
That was the one that we felt like... That's something that we...
We put in... Before we started this podcast, but didn't put it in last year's conversation.
The James Valentine,
that's the US one.
That's one that we didn't put in last year.
Can we do that? I think this has got to be based on what we talked about last year.
We did that with the St. Vincent.
The St. Vincent.
Okay, fine.
For 2015.
Okay, so where are we at with this list? Let me just.
Basically, what we've done there is we have cut every guitar
except that one wasn't on the list.
Every guitar, we've cut every bass product. We've kept every pedal.
Okay,
and then I think also that's a telling sign of exactly what kind of people we are.
Okay, so there's now 8 products: the Ernie Ball James Valentine, the Boss Katana 50, the Fender Bass Breaker 007, Echoline Roadrunner, T-Rex Replicator, Walrus 385 Overdrive, X5 Golden Brownie, Two Notes LeClean, and Barefoot Buttons.
I've got a top 5.
We've got to lose 3. What are we saying?
You got to lose 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go through it again, and bear in mind that you've got to cut 3. You've got to say yes or no.
Okay.
Ernie Ball James Valentine.
No.
Yeah. Wait, we're saying to cut.
No, no,
or
no. Should
we
start
or...
having a conversation about it now?
No, I think we need to trim.
I'm not sure this is great radio.
Okay.
This is like that. This is
just the quickfire round.
Are we saying yes to cut or yes to keep?
Yes to keep.
Okay.
Right. Ernie Ball James Valentine.
Yes.
No.
Boss Katana 50.
Yes.
Fender Bass Breaker 007.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Echoline Roadrunner.
Yes.
T-Rex Replicator.
No.
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 Oh, it's gone. First one. First casualty. So you've got 2 more to lose. Walrus 385 Overdrive.
No. Yes.
Wait, what was that,
no,
Joe?
I said no.
Yes. I also said no.
And I actually plugged it in again, and as much as I love it, it isn't as good as the Roadrunner.
It's gone. One more to lose. X5 Golden Brownie.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Two Notes LeClean.
No. It's very, very good for what it is. I don't think it's... No.
I'm going to go...
I'm going to say no.
That's
two no's. It's gone.
Okay.
It's gone. So we've got...
That's 6 products.
Is it? I thought it was
6.
Yeah, because I was going to say no to the next one.
I disagree. I think the Barefoot Buttons have been fantastic.
Yeah, but the guy's probably going to hate me for this. I actually prefer the Moor Candy Toppers.
Oh, Matt, no, you cannot do that.
I have seen so many Barefoot Buttons on pedal boards.
That's why I was thinking they've exponentially grown.
I just think they're too much money.
They are expensive.
And I think the thing is and I know I'm someone who likes gimmicks, but for me, they are too much money.
Right.
For what they are.
Okay, so let's go around the room. If you had to lose one from that list, what would it be, JB?
The Ernie Ball James Valentine.
Okay, the American...
I'm only kidding. I'm just playing. I know it's a really average guitar. The crap, actually, it could be that. That's such a strong list.
I think the thing is, I think the Barefoot Buttons are a great product. I don't think they were necessarily Gear of the Year. And some people love them and some people want them. But
they're on so many boards, though. That's the thing.
I think I'm actually going to go Ernie Ball, James Valentine.
If we're talking about what stood up from last year, the amount of boards that those are still on.
Completely. It's a retrospective. That's what this is.
They have stood the test of a year. Like, everyone has barefoot buttons. Yeah. Damn. Just look at a pedal board on pedal boards.
Yeah,
you're doing.
There's so
Everyone's
many.
Everyone's got barefoot buttons now.
Yeah.
Matt Knight, if you had to lose one of those.
Well.
Barefoot buttons.
Yeah.
Jay Cross.
Considering that this is 2017's best gear of 2016, and we have to take into account what has come out this year, as well as how these products have aged.
I see where you're going with this.
Echoline.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Because you think the Everest Drive is better than the Roadrunner.
I think that the Everest Drive is better than the Roadrunner, and given a year's hindsight, I think the Golden Brownie probably should have beaten the Echoline first time around.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because
the thing is,
the Golden Brownie has become, and you know, I realise that we're just going down the route of saying it's just another drive pedal, but the Golden Brownie has stood the test of time for the last year as the budget drive pedal.
Yeah, but
we compare
that,
everything against.
But on that, the Everest Drive is better than the Golden Brownie.
Okay.
So
it's not just about that. The X5 Golden Brownie has kind of coined the phrase that Jay used earlier, which I think is something we've come back to, but is it better than the Golden Brownie?
Yeah.
Which is almost become the industry standard of how you judge a drive pedal. And we're not saying
in the same
the
way
there, there are better ones, but damn, like if you're making a drive pedal, it has to be as good as or better.
Well,
than
I guess
Brownie.
For me,
that's
I'm biased towards Roadrunner because, like I said, I bought one and I've had it on my board
absolutely.
For the entire year. But we have referred to the Golden Brownie more, in the last year of podcasts than we probably have the Roadrunner.
Right, here's one for you. So that was Ernie Ball, James Valentine.
Yeah,
barefoot buttons, Echoline, Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the Ernie Ball, James Valentine.
And well, see, for the same
for
reason,
the same reason,
I completely agree. Completely agree.
Which is what I thought you were going to say.
I realised that halfway through the sentence. Actually,
I'm going to say take that off because the new one
is so good.
It's so good,
and even I said it earlier.
Totally, it's gone.
Which I'm going to, and this next sentence is probably going to be inevitable, but. My favourite out of all of that is going to be the Katana 50. And actually, do you know what? I lived in Japan. That was the only bit of kit I had, and it was absolutely superb. I think no amp has caused more of a stir in the entire community than the Katana 50.
You are absolutely right. I don't think we've ever seen anything occur quite like...
And if we talk about
no one expected
In the last... 15 years probably
but no one expected this to, like, even when people saw it, like, this has done well despite of its looks.
Well, and also because you've got to think that what came before it was the Katana head and cabs, which I mean, Matt, you commit
not Katana, Wazzercraft.
Wazzercraft. With the same looks, you know, that were really expensive and, you know, I don't think set the world alight, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, but I think the thing is that was more of the development project.
Yeah, totally.
The crazy thing is, and this is one thing that even shocked me in September when we had like a meeting, is that talking about the community, the Gear Page, which is one of the biggest online guitar forums, the number one talked about product is Katana 50.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Katana. It's had that the thread has had 1 million views.
Yeah,
This product came out, I had no idea that it would be this popular.
Mm-hmm. How about we start putting these in an order? I'm going to say Katana 50 is number one in that because I think there's no denying the impact that product has had on the kind of gear world. I'm going to say that in fourth, Golden Brownie, I think, has to be second.
I agree, Yeah.
We've all agreed that is a fantastic product. I think that Barefoot Buttons probably... I don't know.
I think Barefoot Buttons is probably number three, honestly, for the amount.
I think the Bassbreaker is only kind of still here because we haven't talked about it.
Yeah.
So if that makes sense.
I think the Bassbreaker is fantastic. And the 007 I still think is the pick of the bunch.
Absolutely.
Because it offered something at that real nice it was what everyone had been crying out for. It was a Fender amp at a really low wattage.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. However, I think the Barefoot Buttons, I mean, I don't think we can be don't think anyone's going to mind us saying that when we first saw the Barefoot Buttons, we saw these and we were just like, what on earth is this rubbish that we've been sent? What is this? This is a joke. And it's gone above and beyond what we thought at the time. And
completely agree.
And that's why I love this category so much, is that it gives us the chance to look at what we said last year and think, oh, we were complete idiots. Complete idiots. Just for missing what a great product that was at the time. I'm all about it. I think they're fantastic.
Do you know what was funny? Is I think the Katana 50 nearly didn't make it onto the list.
No. The Katana 50 didn't make it on the list. You suggested the Blues Cube Hot should be on there. And right at the last minute, I said, I think the Katana's a better amp. And then everyone else said, oh yeah, it is a better amp.
But I guess at the time, and this is the thing, because it had only just come out, because it came out in September.
We didn't know where we were.
It hadn't really taken off, and I don't think it really took off until the new year.
No one realised that you could use it live. That was what changed.
Because everyone thought it was just a practice amp, which it kind of isn't. How would everyone feel? Because there was also, you know, just looking at this list here, Echoline Roadrunner, we almost didn't have it in this top five. So how does everyone feel about that being fifth? The Bassbreaker 007 being fourth.
Yep.
In this list.
I mean, I'd have it the other way, but I'm not fussed if Matt agrees.
Matt's going to want it the other way.
Echoline fourth. Fifth.
I was going to say fifth.
I would have the Echoline fourth.
Yeah, I would have the Echoline fourth.
I'm comfortable with that. I'll go with that. I'll say
considering that one of the four of us bought one and had it. And has actually had that idea for a year.
That's a good point.
So there we go. We're 15 minutes into this podcast and we've got a top five already for 2017.
I know no one's got a bloody nose or anything.
I know, exactly. But things are getting a bit heated, you know.
I think the top five relatively obvious though.
Considering there's a lot of stuff that didn't stand the test of even 12 months, you know, that you wouldn't really even look at. And it was an easy number one because the Katana 50 has done so well this year.
I mean, I'd have put the Offset Tele up at number one.
There were some shockers in there though. Reverend going out straight away.
We
fought hard for that.
I really
I didn't.
I really like that guitar. I really like
you did
that
at the time.
Joe,
no, I hated it.
Branton was against it. It was me and Matt that really fought hard for the Billy Corgan. So there we go. 2017's best gear of 2016. The Fender Bassbreaker 007 at number 5. Echoline Roadrunner at number 4. Barefoot Buttons at number 3. X5 Golden Brownie at 2. And the Boss Katana 50 at number 1. So should we move on to some real categories? Things that will actually make it through to the final this year.
Yes.
First up, the best bass thing. Joe Branton,
best bass thing.
Did you just call Joe Branton the best bass thing?
No, he's definitely not.
Thanks, babe.
He gets number 5 on the list. So we're going to rely on you heavily on this one because I think to basses.
You know what?
We should still go around the room so everyone should look something up.
No, the first thing on this list I've actually spent a bit of time with.
Okay, go on then. So the first thing on the list is the Taylor GS Mini Bass.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
I saw this when I went to a shop in Denmark Street and I had a big Taylor display and I was like, oh, GS Mini Bass, everyone's been raving about them, everyone seems they can't seem to get any in stock, and I picked it up and honestly someone had to pry it from my hands.
Really?
It is so much fun that I might buy one.
Okay.
So basically the GS Mini, which I think we can probably say kind of changed the way that people were buying like mini guitars.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's the best mini guitar acoustic you can buy that's not a travel instrument.
Yeah.
In terms of sound, I just
really you think that over the little Martin?
I think they're better.
Oh, it's so much better than the little Martin.
Yeah. Cool.
The construction, everything is absolutely amazing, and they've basically ported that to the bass. It's basically a non-cutaway Martin. I don't know.
Martin Taylor.
Is it? I don't know if they called it like a grand orchestra. Like the
they do. Yeah,
one?
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Grand auditorium. Grand auditorium.
That, I can't remember. I've never remember.
It's the curviest of all the Taylor acoustic shapes. Yeah,
with a decent inbuilt pickup preamp system. But I think it sounds great acoustically, which is the main way that I tried it. But just so easy to play, and for someone like me who's a guitar player, not a bass player, to just pick up and go, this is so much fun. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It sounded great, played great. The only downside is it uses a very specific set of strings that they've made with Elixir just for them.
With Daddario.
Is it with Daddario?
Yeah, Daddario made the strings. Yeah,
I remember. That's interesting because Taylor had a
with Elixir. Yeah,
yes, they do. Yeah, which is why this is such a unique arrangement.
Yeah, but you have to buy those strings. You can't put.
That's right, any because it's an extra, extremely short scale, and they are also brass strings, as is. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
Grand Symphony, of course, GS.
Sorry, 699.
Okay.
Interesting that you say that like it's not very much money. That's quite a lot of money.
I don't think it is. Personally.
All right, money bags.
Well, you know, I can't help it. I'm minted, all right?
The thing with these instruments is that they do straddle the line. You know, they're not a cheap... You know, it's not a travelling acoustic bass you want to take down the beach. It's a proper recording instrument gigging instrument.
With its own unique sound. And
yeah, so I can see why it's that kind of money. I wouldn't expect them... Obviously, you know, Taylor are not going to put out something super cheap that's not going to be very good. They just don't really work like that. So 699 doesn't surprise me at all. It's... When we get down to the bare bones of this list, is a £700 acoustic bass going to hang on this list?
Well,
let's find out.
Are you ready for this?
Go on. You're ready for this? Go on, say a piece.
The Taylor GS Mini Bass, not fit for purpose. It sucks.
Why?
You can't have basses that short scale.
Why? But Matt said it sounds amazing.
Rubbish.
Loves
the intonation doesn't work, or at least I couldn't get it to. The strings are just your playing. Floppy. It's unbelievable.
It's probably your playing.
Yeah, but I think that's what makes it so good for people who just want to pick it up and play who aren't bass players, because it feels easy to play.
Man, I just think... I don't know who it's aimed at. I don't know what its purpose is. I couldn't work that out. Like, if you want a small... bass, you know, if you want something tiny, maybe get a uke bass. At least they still sound like a bass. Like, brass strings don't work at the best of times on basses. It's a bit of a, like, an acoustic bass is an oxymoron at best anyway, because, you know, you still have to plug it in to make it loud enough to hear. And I thought, again, this is just extremely quiet. I couldn't really play this unplugged, because the concept doesn't work. A sound hole bass acoustic instrument with bass strings,
think you would,
is not a functional thing.
I don't think you'd necessarily gig with it, but just to sit at home and jam with it by yourself, just like play some bass, I think that's great.
I mean, with that in mind, that is quite a lot of money, I guess. But then it, you know, it does have a really
but
good preamp
again,
in there.
So. Half the time I play my James Valentine, I don't plug it in because I can't plug my amp in half the time. So I think, you know, if a guitar sounds great acoustically, that's, I think, a big plus point.
Yeah, maybe. I was just, I expected to really like this, and I just thought... For £700, I thought it played terribly. I don't think they've thought it through, and I don't think it stands up to the rest of the GS Mini line, which I think are a really great range of instruments. This just seems like it's had no thought into it. I strongly disliked this instrument.
Wow, interesting, interesting. Yeah. So, what do you want to talk about then, Joe, on the list?
Well, we can just... okay. Well, we could talk about the... a couple of things that I've really liked this year, which were the Fender Offset Mustang bass and the Yamaha BB734.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Fender first, the Offset Mustang, which I think you've got, haven't you?
Yeah,
you've got one at the
moment. Yeah, yeah. So, one absolutely cracking instrument. Like, I do really love the old bridge on the Mustangs, and actually I think it was kind of another sort of important thing on the Mustangs because they're short scale, because the old bridges were through body strung. I kind of thought that was sort of quite an important feature, so the fact they've changed to a modern P-based bridge kind of didn't make much sense to me. But other than that, I sort of think they've modernized it in such a great way by giving it sort of a PJ pickup configuration. You know, great colour schemes, modern hardware. It's just they've done exactly what James is talking about with the rest of the Offset series. They've taken something that's known for sort of being like a bit quirky, and they've made it into a really stand-up, stable instrument. And for that reason, I think it's brilliant. I think you're seeing them all over the place as
there are a lot of people playing them.
Exactly.
Same with the rest of the Fender Offset series. You know, it just seems that that's really struck a chord with loads of different types of musicians.
Yeah, exactly. Cool colours across the range, and just like just everything about this bass is great. It's a super cool, short scale, affordable instrument, a wonderful alternative to the precision and jazz bass. And it's For the first time, it's made the Mustang a viable instrument for people who aren't just looking for something like vintage correct. I couldn't love it more. I think it's just a great, simple, super cool short scale. Maybe the best short scale you can get. Because short scales generally are, you're making a trade-off, because they're normally old school. Like, a short scale is normally an SG bass, and we know you can't make an SG bass sound modern with that big sort of like mud bucker in the neck. You know you're going in for a certain sound. Or what, a Hofner? Again, like, you're going in for a particular sound. It's hard to find a short scale bass that will do that modern thing. And I think a lot of people do want a short scale bass because you just fly around those things, especially the Mustang necks. They're so quick. So, yeah, just
I'll be really interested to see what the feedback is from you and sort of the market in general with regards to the offset Mustang and then the JMJ
when they land.
Yeah. When they land, because that is, it's really interesting that for so long you couldn't get a Mustang bass or anything Fender short scale. I mean, at one point, was it Mikey Way?
Mikey Way had his Squire, which had a humbucker. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Silver Sparkle.
Silver Sparkle, yeah. With a big humbucker in the mid position. You also had the other one, the one with the big Tele humbucker in the middle. What was that? What was that range called? The Modern player.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, it seems like we've gone from nothing to loads of stuff. Yeah. Available
and hundreds of different Mustangs.
Well, yeah, and I just think, especially with the that the one that you've got, because you've got it in blue, and then the JMJ's coming out in blue.
Yeah,
obviously with the, you know, there's some spec changes there.
Yeah. What's the price difference?
Couple of hundred.
Yeah, I
quid.
Think the JMJ is going to be like £800, yeah.
Okay.
Like standard Mustang prices, whereas the Mustangs are a bit cheaper because they're like priced in line with
interesting
Mexicans. But it'll be interesting. I think people are kind of woke to Mustang.
Don't
now.
Say that.
but I think people are more aware of Mustangs than they've ever been. So I wonder if the JMJ is actually, when it does land, going to do better than I think previous Mustangs have done.
Yeah, and they're kind of road worn, aren't they, as well?
Yeah. So road worn, yeah.
Very different beast. But yeah, I think the offset Mustang is doing pretty much what the offset range in general is doing, which is opening up these instruments to a whole different range of players. And looking very cool while doing it, I think.
Yeah, which is why, really, it should have been, we should have been able to put that in there.
Still bitter. So, Joe, you and I went to see the Yamaha BB734A at the launch event in Milan back in June.
Yeah.
And those basses are super cool, building on the kind of old formula of what we know from BB basses. But I think a range that's kind of lost its way fairly recently in that, you know, they've had those kind of proprietary pickups in there, so you couldn't change out pickups in
That's
there.
Right.
They also began, you know, that body shape in general is quite big, which is something that they've addressed with this new range. They've slimmed down the body slightly, changed the body shape so they're not quite so dinner platey, and also added regular shape pickups. So if you ever wanted to do any modding, change pickups, they've done that, which addresses two of the complaints of the previous series. Now with the 734 as well, it's also active, so powerful active circuit in there as well.
Passive as well.
Yeah,
active switch.
Exactly, a passive or active switch, so it's like you can bring in the active circuit, it's not reliant on it. And also the other thing is the finish is really good, because it's not one of the problems I had with the other ones. Although the body finishes were great, I never really liked what they did with the necks, whereas these, you know, the 734 in particular has got like a matte black finish. And the necks feel really good.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about this bass.
I love this. Well, I love satin black as a finish. So I think it's brilliant. I think having normal size precision and jazz bass pickups was a fantastic move. They kept all the features that were really great about the 1024 and the 424 series that came before, which were things like they had quarter sawn maple necks. They had 45-degree angle strung through.
Oh yeah, that's so cool.
Which was so great, rather than 90, where you were literally bending a string. Like, that's not good for sustain. So the 45 degree angle made so much more sense, because the string's only it's only bending that.
There's more contact at the break angle and stuff like
that. Exactly. They also added something that I thought was really cool from the Billy Sheehan signature model Attitudes, which was an extra diagonally drilled
neck screw,
yeah, so diagonally up through the body into the neck to improve contact. Of course, Billy Sheehan has it because he plays a hard tail and does loads of like neck bends
the neck. Yeah.
So this actually gives you the option to do that, which is great. But yeah, like everything about this instrument, and even having active and passive on a £700-ish instrument, like Fender aren't giving you that option until they're sort of £1,800 or £1,600 mark. Like that was a great touch. I felt that everything about this range was, they had listed, like we've mentioned it before, but I was invited to go and like offer my thoughts on the new range like 3 years ago when they were designing.
And they threw that out. They didn't listen to that, obviously. They were like, no.
Well, I mean, they could have taken everything that he said to heart, and by now he'd have decided that that was all the worst thing possible.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Is that why they've all got active circuitry? Were you into them back at the time? Back in the day?
But yeah, I just think this is a product of Yamaha absolutely listening to players and creating something that is what?
Just listening to players like me. Yeah.
No, it was listening to people, and I think it's a great product on account of that. It's a perfect base for modern playing.
Tell me a little bit about the Mark Bass Evo 1, which we've seen at a couple of shows. We saw at the London Bass Day.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, looking back on it, because I couldn't actually remember what this head was, and I know that you've listened to it, and I heard it at the show, but I haven't heard it since. Looking back on it, I forgot how much stuff there is on the front panel.
So it looks like a JTM.
Yeah. Well, I got them to send me one for a bit. I had to send it back. But I thought it was great. So the cool thing about the Evo 1 is what they were essentially doing was taking the... They were taking the concept of the multi-amp, the DV and Mark Bass multi-amp, which was their kind of their sort of Kempery style thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Taking the concept of that and simplifying it for live use, because of course you don't, the nature of the display screen on the multi-amp and the directional controls meant that there was a lot of like channel hopping. It was difficult. You could set up great sounds with it, but you had to know what you were doing, and it was going to take time.
It was a bit more than bass players usually need.
Exactly. So this gives you two channels with two inputs, and it has 8 different amp presets, which you can change by plugging in the head, but 8 different amplifier presets in each amplifier, and you can run these amps. You can either plug them both in and run them maybe separately through an ABY or through a pedal board, or you can blend them or play sort of one or the other.
I think that's quite cool.
And I thought that was great. Yeah. See, I was using it.
It's just a mix control on the front, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's a little mix control on the front. I love that because I was like, there was an old, like there was a B15, like an Ampeg B15, like old studio amp, super woolly sort of sim on there. And it was great. It gave such wonderful, like thick, rich sub. And I could blend that up with like, say, a Galien Kruger emulated sound for all that like brittle top end that I'd still need to cut through a mix. So it was like having two bass amps.
But I was going to say, I mean, the other thing that Mark Bass have always been very good at is supporting upright bass players. You know, their amps have always been designed with electric and acoustic upright in mind. And they've talked about this before when they've done two channel amps, is that they want you to be able to take one amp and have something for your electric bass and your upright bass, because I know a lot of Mark Bass players, or a lot of upright players play Mark Bass, and they will also, over the course of the show, also just use a regular electric bass. So I think the idea behind having the two separate ins is that you can just plug two guitars in, and when you're doing your electric set, then you use input one, for example, and when you're doing your upright set, you use input two. And with this, it allows you to have two completely different sounding amps, because you've got the kind of the modelling on the separately on the two channels. So I think it's very smart. And for a player like me as well, you know, I'd quite like to do, you know, similar to what you just said, Joe, which is, you know, have a like a B15 sound to fill out the bottom end, but then something super cutting for the top end and be able to blend in between the two. This is a cool bit of kit.
It's a great bit of kit. It's kind of like, this is all the best bits of like modelling of complicated digital modelling amps, but then taking out all the screens, because there's no display screen on this. It's all done with rotaries. So it's like a retro controlled modern digital amp, which is perfect.
And it's funny because you were talking about it, and I was like, I remember you talking about it when I came to get to do some demos, and I was like, that is a cool product, and I like the idea of it. And I was like, I can't remember how much it was. I just googled it, and I was like, £739.
Yeah,
that's insanely, to me, that seems insane. I know Mark Bass have always been really good, but that seems insanely good price.
Yeah,
for what you get.
Well, that's it. It's fantastic. It's kind of something that,
and if you want even more, I guess you buy the multi-amp.
Yeah,
but this is like, this is simple if you want it, but you can make your rig far more complex if that's what you need.
It's 500 watts as well, so super powerful, or you know, powerful enough to do the job. And I think Mark Bass are just all about that. They make tools for you to do the job. And like I said, for a lot of their players, I think this is kind of the best thing that they will have ever made. Because I know a lot of people will take, you know, a little Mark Bass combo, and then, you know, they have their electric set, and they've got to dial the sound in for that, and then for their upright set, they've got to dial the sound in for that, and this kind of removes the need for that.
Yeah.
I think it's a super awesome product. Headphone output as well, which you can just use to play without a cab.
Yeah.
So, nice indeed. Another product that we keep seeing at shows is Dark Glass Electronics, and they released the Alpha Omega this year for bass players. What's the deal with that?
Well, do you know what's funny? When we were, because we've said to the listeners, but we're recording these all in one, what is now a very long day. But earlier on, right, whilst we were podcasting, I had a friend Facebook me and being like, oh, can you do any deals on the Alpha Omegas? And right. It's just like,
Dark Glass seem to be setting the bass world on fire at the moment.
Absolutely. And I think especially kind of within a lot of the bands that I play with, everyone's got Dark Glass on their board.
I think there's a lot of that kind of like tech, gen, math bands that have a very particular bass sound, I think, and this kind of really dials into that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, everyone's going for the Dark Glass preamps. People are retiring their Sans Amp their Tech 21 Sans Amps. Like, that is a big deal.
To me, this feels like the new Sans Amp.
Well, that's it, but that is a huge deal.
For the
deal.
Modern bass player, maybe not someone Sans like Amp. Mark and Jay, but maybe for the modern bass player.
The Sans Amp has been the pedal, the absolute number one pedal for all bass players for probably longer than a decade, maybe around a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Longer than that.
Oh, definitely, like 25 years or something.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's it. So for something to be starting to replace that is a massive deal. But yeah, the Alpha Omega is slightly different. It's two different preamps that obviously can be driven, can be used as preamps or drives, but it's two separate ones that sound completely different that you can then blend, that you can never, it's just controlled via one rotary, which will give you Alpha and Omega, so you can blend kind of between the two, I guess, kind of in the same way as an Evo, as we were just talking about with the Mark Bass Evo 1. This is essentially that on the floor.
Well, do you know what sold it to me? And I know these two definitely won't like it, but I saw Nolly Getgood, who was the bass player for Periphery, demoing it.
That's not his real name.
The surname is Getgood.
Right.
His name's Adam Getgood, but Nolly. Okay. But he actually is an amazing guitar player, and he worked with Bare Knuckle from day one, doing all of their demos and helping design their pickups as well. But he played a Dingwall. Love those basses.
Yeah.
But he was demoing that Alpha Omega, and I was like, that bass sound is like such an amazing modern bass tone. I was like, from that one pedal, I was like, it sounds brilliant.
That's it. And as the bass world moves more into the direction that I think the guitar world is going towards as well, which is having an amplifier that is a completely clean platform and then doing everything on the floor, the Alpha Omega is an absolute, like, this means you will sound like this everywhere you go. Like, it's a completely perfect
I think that's the thing, is it's not, you know, it will dial in different sounds, but once you've nailed your sound, this will give you that sound.
It's that Sans Amp concept, isn't it? But, you know, taken to a new quality level.
They are expensive, however.
Go on.
Well, I think the Alpha Omega, there is a new signature model by a bass player, I don't know who he is, but that's not the one we're considering for this anyway. But it is £310. Okay. So how much is
a Sans Amp? Just as a
199? Yeah.
Just for
209.
Oh, well, there we go. I did say I'd look it up. The first Sans Amp pedal, which wasn't the bass one, it was the guitar version, was 1989. So nearly 30 years ago.
The other thing is, we have... You say about how you think this might be the new Sans Amp.
Yeah.
We have said this before.
Of course.
You know, when the MXR M108, is that what that is? M180.
Oh yeah, the M180.
The M180. Yeah, right. When that came out, everyone went right. That's it. Sans Amp killer. And then it kind of disappeared. And then the BB1X came around, and it was like, right, here we go, Sans Amp killer. And then it kind of disappeared.
Have to wait until Gear of the Year 2018 right. to find out whether it's potentially Gear.
Yeah. Does this have a? Has it got XLR out?
Actually, no, it doesn't.
Actually, no.
I mean, well, there you go then.
Right, it does have a balanced out, which you can go XLR. You can go TRS to XLR.
Yeah, I mean, if it's balanced,
fine.
It's
then
so it's balanced out. So it's not an actual physical XLR out. Okay. But it's a TRS to XLR.
Right. Okay.
So a couple more bits of bass gear, Joe, that I hope you'll give us the lowdown on, and something that we actually talked about halfway through the year, I guess. Ibanez SRH 500F.
Well, why are you laughing?
It's just a ridiculous bass. I'm
ridiculous.
Yeah.
So this is a fretless semi-hollow SR bass that runs completely off.
Oh yeah, completely normal. Yeah, this isn't ridiculous.
Yeah, Joe, I didn't actually put this on this list to begin with, and Joe insisted that it was on there.
So it's a deep body as well. So it's like a thick.
Can you get an iPhone
hollow
in
body?
This is exactly what I was going to say.
So it's a thick body piezo only fretless bass with an F hole, comes in a violin finish. I think it is taken the SR shape, which I dislike. They have managed to make it look good.
Put it in a colour which is even worse than the shape.
No, what are you talking about?
It's got a bit of mushroom burst about it.
A little bit like.
Okay, so I think at a point when not very many mainstream fretless basses are being produced. Your kind of choice right now is sort of this or a what? Are you all right?
We're just looking at pictures of it.
I'm a little bit disappointed it's tuned
so
in standard.
Deep.
It's pretty deep.
It's great. I think it's a wonderful instrument. Comes with flat wounds. Comes strung with flats as well.
Well, yeah, you'd expect it to with this.
Well, I don't know. Tell that to Fender. That's not what they string their fretlesses with.
Okay. Yeah, they're doing indeed round wounds. So why have you chosen this for the list?
Because it came out this year, but
okay.
No, because the fretless market is so there's not a lot going on in the fretless market at the moment, and this I think is original, unique. It sounds great, it plays great, and it's Ibanez doing a fantastic job of straddling the sort of modern and traditional marketplace.
Okay,
a great bass.
So one last thing that you wanted to talk about, the Sire P7 bass.
Yeah.
Who is Sire?
So Sire are a company that they approached Marcus Miller a couple of years ago. Marcus Miller had a very popular signature model with Fender, a very popular jazz bass. And they approached him and went into discussions about. He wanted to make a bass that was more affordable for kids learning to play bass. He wanted to get really involved in sort of people picking up bass as an instrument. And the problem that he had was that his signature model with Fender was £1,000. Like, kids weren't going to buy his bass. So he partnered up with Sire to make new versions of his signature jazz bass that were super affordable, but also had loads and loads of premium features. Now, that was his original. I think they were called the V series.
Yeah.
And they were great, very popular. He has applied it this year to his P series, which are PJ versions of that. They come in a range of like absolutely fantastic finishes. Sort of great bodywood, block inlays, 18 volt active circuit, so 2 9 volts
of course.
In the back, passive options. 3-band active EQ if you want, and also sort of, you know, the passive EQ there as well as mid shifting. I mean, maybe 7 or 8 controls on the instrument itself. Which,
there's a lot of controls on there.
But you know, all for kind of $500, you know, for an instrument. So I think Sire have managed to create something in that sort of Fender style at like a fraction of the cost that Fender are able to put something out for.
Can I play a horrible aesthetic devil's advocate here?
Go on.
That is a bad headstock.
The headstock is bad.
I love the headstock.
And a terrible logo.
Yeah it just says Marcus Miller.
The thing is it looks really cheap.
No, it doesn't.
The bass itself looks really good.
The bass itself looks great. The blocking lays look fantastic. I think it's great that you've got the PJ options there. The bridge looks pretty chunky. That headstock look, and you know, that won't bother a lot of people, and that's fine. I am obviously biased because of where I work and what I play, but I think that headstock, that would put me off. It really would. In the same way as I would really struggle to buy an Epiphone because the headstock puts me off.
Can I say a big shout out to them, because they offer everything left-handed, which not a lot of bass manufacturers do.
Yeah.
Not every colour, but every model has got a left-handed version, and every model has also got a fretless version as well. So if you prefer that, that is also available.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Joe, so I'm going to leave this up to you, basically, because I don't think we will help you out a bit with putting these into, getting
so far as I thought we were going to lock something in.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. Well, I think that we haven't, the three of us don't have enough kind of experience with this stuff to actually lock this down, and I kind of feel that next year maybe the best bass category might not exist.
Well, they'd have to release some stuff.
Well, exactly, this is the problem, is the companies, you know, who we've got easy access to haven't released any bass things that have been of any note.
And
this
bass
year.
Players just use, everyone uses the same pedals.
Everyone uses a P bass, yeah. And like no pedals basically, so it doesn't
I still think that we should be able to lock everything in, and I don't know about you, Mark and Matt, but I personally, the GS mini bass for me is
what are you saying on this?
I mean, I'm definitely, you know, I'm thirding the GS mini bass.
Well, there we go.
See you later.
If any single bass is revolutionised bass players for the masses.
In all fairness, the thing I've spent the most time with out of all of these is the Yamaha BB734A, which I really liked. I was really impressed by it. So I would suggest that gets locked in. But I'm happy to turn this category, and I don't know why I'm doing this, I'm happy to turn it over to Joe.
I agree. Joe.
No, that's not fair. Come on.
Why?
Because he likes the argy-bargy of the whole thing.
Well, you can argy-bargy when we're talking the best accessory, because there's some classics.
There's a lot in the best accessory. Okay. So let's lock in the BB734, because I think it's a very, very good product. Are we saying the Mustang bass as well?
The Mustang bass is also a fantastic product.
Okay.
The Evo 1, I think, is great as well.
Yep.
And we have to get two more.
Dark glass.
I
really like the dark
glass.
I'd
be really keen to see.
That's a product.
If nothing else,
buy.
I would like for the dark glass to be bookmarked for us to look at it next year and see if we.
Yeah.
Whether it has established itself.
So what are we locking in, Joe?
So I would say out of the rest of these, the dark glass and the fretless Ibanez.
Okay. Oh my God. Interesting.
Well, so it doesn't have to be. If
I think it's fair to say that you haven't had much hands-on time with Sire stuff.
I have, but not with the new P.
Yeah.
So with the jazz bass version, yes, but
you
not
hate
with
the jazz bass.
I really think that if, based off of what we just did there with the 2016's best gear of 2017-16, I really think we would benefit from having the Taylor in there.
Okay.
Even just as, because that Ibanez, is kind of just another Ibanez that you've just chosen because products. There wasn't very many Ibanezes.
And I think that
the
okay.
I think the Taylor is genuine.
I'd be
it's
happy
something
with that.
Different.
Okay. And
even
I'd
if
be
it's,
happy with
and
that.
If it's fifth.
I also think because there is such a dearth of bass products, because Matt liked it so much,
yeah.
It kind of and but you obviously didn't like it so much.
Yeah, we should definitely have it.
It needs to
You're
go
right.
in fifth. It can't be in the top two, obviously, no, but it needs no. to go in fifth.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we say that is fifth on this list, let's move that to there. What are we saying for a fourth?
I would say the it would have to be the Alfa Omega for yep. me, just as the only product that I've only seen demos of and not mm-hmm. not tried out. Despite I appreciate the impact they're having,
yeah,
yeah.
Personally,
as
to
a
me,
brand,
and this is hard now because I guess the only one that's trying these products, whereas you guys aren't. Because we could argue about this if you were, but
I mean, I've tried the Yamaha and the Offset Mustang.
Yeah, but I meant specifically with this Dark Glass. They haven't done enough for me to make me want to take my Sans amp off. But almost, I kind of wonder if it's a different thing. I like the Sans amps because I like sounding a bit ampeggy. And I think they're way more modern. And it's yeah. the really modern players that are going for Dark Glass. And I think maybe the trad guys are still sticking with their Sans
amps. Well, because I know Dave from Tosca
yeah.
with Rabir, he uses
he's
Dark Glass.
Now,
isn't he?
He's now endorsed by Dark Glass. He's yeah. using the Dark Glass heads
and
stuff. Caps
and he's got
well.
A really like well, modern
he doesn't,
kind of...
He basically doesn't believe in mids. So yeah. it's a perfect product for him.
But. Which yeah. is strange for a recording engineer, which he is. You know, you think yeah. he would know that you need a little bit of mid in there. But
if you've got no mids, then...
Well, I guess it means...
If nothing's got any mids, then...
What it means is if you don't have any mids on the bass, you can just have a lot of guitars, which I think is what those guys are into. You know,
I'm actually a established member of the No Mid Society.
Right, okay. You yeah. can sort of wander around.
Yeah, there's up and down.
anywhere but the middle.
Yeah,
no
just
mids.
Avoid the middle.
I'm sensing that the Mark Bass Evo 1 could go third on this list.
I don't know.
The two basses to fight out at the top. How do we feel about that?
I think the Mark Bass is a fan... Like a wonderful product. On paper.
Oh, I'm gonna snip that one out for the
Joe
for the scrapbook.
What? No, on
Joe
paper.
Joe Brenton into
paper.
A Mark Bass pet.
No. I tell you what. I don't think it can do. I still don't think it can do the trad thing. I still think Class D's have a long, long way to go. I think in any band that want to sound in any way like louder or aggressive or have any presence, I don't think there's any place for anything that's Class D.
I just think the pure flexibility that you get there means that it deserves to be on this list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really like it. I'm just saying, like, I think it's a fantastic product. I still don't think any digital amplification for bass is good enough.
You've got two spaces left. Yamaha BB734A and the Fender Offset Mustang Bass.
It's tough. I've had both of them at my house for ages. Yeah. I took both of them to a recording session recently. I really like both of them. I've considered using both of them in Polymath.
Okay.
You
are a big BB man.
I have been a BB man for a long time, and so I think for that reason, the Yamaha BB has to win this category.
Oh, blimey.
But I absolutely love that Offset Mustang. I think it's fantastic. Ooh. And the day that strings are available, short scale, that mean that you can tune anything other than 440, I will play a Mustang.
Yeah.
But as it stands, you can't drop tune short scales.
Definitely the Yamaha is the more flexible of those two and incredibly well built. Props to Yamaha because I think, you know, BBs have a lot of love, but the recent BB ranges haven't really cut the mustard. Although there's been some fun stuff like that sparkly orange, no doubt, signature one that they did.
Yeah.
That's fun, but I think ultimately they hadn't kept up with where they needed to be, and I think this new range of BBs is doing a great job of that. So cool. So that's best bass thing from five, the Taylor GS Mini Bass, four, the Dark Glass Alfa Omega, three, Mark Bass Evo 1, the Fender Offset Mustang Bass at two, and at number one, the Yamaha BB734A. I think we should take a little break and then we'll do best accessory. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Swag. Let's do it.
And we're back with the last opportunity to make it into the final days judging in Guitar Nerd's Gear of the Year 2017. We're back because the last category that we're judging is Best Accessory.
Best Accessory!
I mean, this is the one.
Vital.
This is Matt's favourite category every year. He loves it. So we've got some things on here. I'll read the names out first, then we'll discuss them briefly, and then we'll wheedle out a top five. I think there's seven things, so we'll have to chop a couple and then put it into a top five.
Chop it up.
Indeed. So the submissions for best accessory are Three Monkeys solderless patch cables.
Power cables.
Solderless power cables. In fact, they submitted both. So we can choose whether we want patch cables or power cables.
Power cables are a better option.
Okay. I think so. I think it's a bit more totally interesting.
Okay, yeah. Fine. So the solderless power cables, the Dario pedal tuner, the Nomad Music Octopus multi-tool, the Boss patch cable solderless system, the Ernie Ball Paradigm Slinkies, the Moore Radar, and the Soundbrenner Pulse Wearable Metronome. There's actually some good stuff on there. I was just thinking like, oh, if we got to cut two, I don't know which two I want to cut. So let's talk about the Three Monkeys solderless power cables. Yeah. So Matt, you had a look at them.
Yep, and I actually put one together yesterday. And I think this is the one thing, right? So you can get solderless patch cable kits, and there's loads of people that do them, and there's one on this list, and it's great, but no one really does a cut-to-length power cable. So you can do that on the Gig Rig modular power system, but it's fairly expensive.
Yeah.
But if you've got, I don't know, a Voodoo Labs or a fuel tank or something, sometimes the cables they give you are either way too short or mm-hmm. way too long. And underneath your pedal board, you end up with a bunch of mess and they get pulled out and they come, you know, confusing and tangled. This basically is a cut-to-length power cable system that is... I was like, I wonder how that'll actually work. You literally just screw the end onto the cable.
Yeah.
And I push it in, you don't have to like use a screwdriver, you just cut it to the length and it literally just screws on with five turns. I was like, and it works. I was like, that is brilliant.
Yeah, I was very impressed by just how neat the whole package
My
was.
My only thing with it is they don't give you enough they only give you 2 foot of cable and four plugs. That's 2 1-foot power cables, and I'm like, if you're kind of trying to do a really neat system, you need to buy quite a lot.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, wouldn't it be better to get
a bigger pack?
Yeah, get like a ream of maybe not. Yeah, maybe.
I would say maybe do like 20 foot of power cable because you've probably got more power cable than you do patch cables. Yeah. Because generally patch cables are really short. And do like 10 plugs, but with like 20 foot of cable.
Yeah.
I don't think many people are going to buy 4 plugs, 2 feet of cable, unless you're just patching one small thing on your pedal board. But I think it's an ease of use, and actually the power cable is like a fairly thick patch cable.
Yeah.
So it's far more sturdy than your run-of-the-mill DC cable.
It's definitely a great product. My only concern is the price, because when you do get up to lengths like you're talking about there, it starts to get quite pricey. So if you're
$14, I think, for one effectively what you could make is 2 1-foot power cables.
Yeah, which you know, it's not crazy money, and if you're wiring up a pro board, I don't think it's beyond the realms. I don't think it's too expensive for that. Mm. But if you're just starting out and you're thinking, I want to clean up my board a bit, you could end up spending quite a lot of money on this.
Yeah.
When you might not necessarily
I think where it's actually come in handy, where I've put a couple of boards together recently and I've seen a couple of people suggest it, is if you've got a really small pedal board, I don't know, like a Nano, and it's got 6 pedals on it. One of them happens to be a TU3, but you've only got a 5-way daisy chain. You can use one of these to go out of the TU3 into the other pedal and then just use a normal daisy chain against the other 4 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's quite handy for that. It's a very cool product. I just think they need to maybe refine how you actually
the
buy
them. The package that you get.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Branson, you've spent some time with the Dario pedal tuner.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a great looking tuner. It's a bit iPhone-y. So the whole thing's like a glass topped tuner. So it's just the glass top and then sort of the foot switch, the on off foot switch. So I guess kind of in that sort of similar modern style and size to the TC Polytune Mini. It's not mini because it's longer, but it's slim. It's designed for people with big pedal boards because it's making itself a slimmer size so that you can fit more other stuff on whilst maintaining a large display. Certainly, I absolutely love the TU3. I think it's a completely quintessential. And now that I now that I use the MS3, I just use the tuner on that, to be honest. But the TU3 does have a dated display, like in comparison to the pedal train, the TC.
Yeah.
The TC was kind of revolutionary because they were like, well, we're going to make it really big so you can see it anywhere and really bright. And that's what Dodori have gone after, the same thing. So I think it's a fantastic looking, good size, excellent tuner that is certainly a kind of a run. It's in the right place. Like it's no one ever manages to come close to Boss or TC for tuners. And I think this actually is something that should be considered. I don't know if it's different enough for me from the TC.
Like Worth mentioning, price-wise, it's in the same ballpark as well. They're £65. Mm. So, you know, for not much more, I think you can get a TU3.
Yeah.
Or the maybe even cheaper, the Polytune.
Yeah.
So
exactly. So for kind of from that perspective, I think it's in an awkward position because I think Boss and TC are both so established as being the company that you go to for for tuning.
TU3 is the cheapest,
really,
out of the Polytune Mini and the Dodario,
and definitely the only one out of the three that would survive being thrown against a wall.
We need to try that at some point. That's a video for you.
Yeah, there you go. But nonetheless, a great product, like a great tuner, but I think just a really tough marketplace.
Yeah, I think you're going up against some big competition, really. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Matt, the Nomad Music Octopus Multi-Tool.
Yeah, so this came up on a Premier Guitar press release some time ago, and I just messaged him and was like, I think this is a really cool product. They also did the polish that I know you really liked, and I gave you a bottle of, and I've got a bottle of.
The One Guitar System.
Which is amazing, and I was like, yeah, let's check it out. And they sent it to us, and I was like, as a gig bag tool, I was like, I just think it's brilliant. It's not like, the one thing I hate is when you get those multi-tools that are like everything folds out like a Swiss Army knife, and then you don't really have enough length on like the Allen keys or the screwdriver to actually make it usable. Where this has gone, right, what are the 8 most essential tools that you basically need to fix a guitar in a quick situation, and we'll just put it on one tool. So the end is like 4 different sized hex wrenches that do fit into both a Strat jack socket and a Tele.
Yeah, that's the most impressive bit about this whole thing, I think.
Yeah, so it will tighten up a Strat jack socket if you need to. The screwdriver end pulls out and is reversible, so it's either flathead or Phillips. And yeah, I just think that it's not like I'm going to be a tech and here's my only tool that I need. I think it's just like, oh, something's broken on stage and I need to like quickly tighten up my Strat button, or I need to like tighten up the jack on my guitar or something like that. So just, and you know, for $12.99,
I mean, they're as low as £9.70 at the moment.
But like I said, I think the nice thing is they haven't gone for that Swiss Army knife design where, because I've got something similar to that, and it's so annoying because you're like, I want to use the screwdriver, but it feels horrible to hold normally, and if you kind of bend it at an angle, you don't really get any like.
And then you also run the risk of it slipping and like crushing your hand. Yeah. It's the worst thing in the world.
Or even worse, marking your guitar.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I love Music Nomad. I don't know if you know the background to them, but basically they were started by a guy who worked in the car polish industry. Like, he made car polishes, but he was also a musician, and he was just like, do you know what? All the polishes for instruments are crap compared to guitar polishes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take everything I've learned from my car polish, and I'm just going to make instrument-friendly versions of those. And that's what the Music Nomad range is. And honestly, that the one, it's called the Guitar One polish, is one of the best things you can buy for guitar. Like, I think it's legitimately one of the best accessories you can buy. Unfortunately, it didn't come out this year. It's been out for quite some time. Yeah. But the Octopus looks like, again, they've just thought about it. You know, it's a screwdriver, essentially, but it's got different attachments and it's got different wrenches built into it. I'm going to have to get one of these. This looks awesome.
Yeah.
Really good.
I think it was... And they also sent us one of their, like, little body polishing cloths as well, which I thought was quite cool. But this was definitely the best thing of the two they released this year.
Matt and Joe, have you used... I mean, Matt, I know you have. The Boss Patch Cable Solderless System. I wanted to get another perspective. Joe, have you used them?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I haven't.
Matt, tell us about them.
Okay, so I've been a long time George L. cable user.
Yeah.
And I just totaled up the amount of George L. cables I've got, and this is actually quite scary. I've got 47 complete George L. patch cables right now. They're $4.99 per plug. Bear in mind, I've been buying them for 10 years. But when you think how much that is, and that's not even including the cable or the little plastic caps. And the thing is they've, you know, and they've lasted and have been absolutely fine. But now that I've gone, or when I went to the ES8 for a switching system, they're, because they're the oldest solderless patch cable kit, they've also got the biggest footprint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't fit in switching systems very well. And you can go straight plug, but it means I have to replace half of the plugs with straight ones. And actually, the when the original prototypes of these, I was like, oh, you should be able to make them right angled or straight. Mm-hmm. So they put a little notch in them and you can literally just bend them over for right angle, or they can come out the back of a switcher straight, and they've got the smallest, one of the, probably one of two of the smallest footprints on solderless cables. Really easy to put together. My only downside with them is they tighten up with a little grub screw, and it's a very small grub screw. So if you're kind of not as nimble with your fingers as I am, like a big clumsy oaf, you can.
Will the can the grub screw be tightened by the Nomad Music Octopus multi tool?
No, but they do come with a screwdriver. So they come with the correct screwdriver. And actually, the reason
Nomad Music Octopus multi tool already
out of date.
Already out of date.
But
rendered
I
useless.
But one thing is, I decided to replace my whole board with the Boss patch cables, and I've just bought the bulk system, the bulk set that we sell, which is 150 foot of cable and 100 plugs.
How much does that cost?
Well, I pay trade.
Don't let us know what you pay.
But I think it's cool. I think if you're using switching systems, I think it's very cool. But also, if you want to fit everything on a small board and you're using normal jack cables, these fit together. So if you put two together side by side, even with the cable, they're about the same footprint as a fairly chunky nitric jack.
Yeah, having a look at some pictures here, it does look like a pretty solid system.
Yeah, and it's really easy to put together, and the quality is really good.
Yeah. Something else that, well, one thing that I tried this year, I've switched over to Ernie Ball Paradigm Slinkies, regular Slinkies on my Les Paul.
Can I get a snake oil?
No, they're really good. Right. They're really good, right. Because they have lasted for ages on my Les Paul. Obviously, I haven't tested them in the way that they have suggested testing them, like, you know, like hang...
dangling them off a building.
Yeah, like hang off a building or hang, you know, loop them around a tree branch and hang on them. They say that they're basically indestructible. I obviously haven't been able to test that, but as a set of strings, they feel phenomenal.
Ouch! The price, though.
They are quite expensive, but, you know, it just depends how much longer you think you're going to get out of them. And to be fair, I have had a fair amount of use out of them, yeah. And they have been sat in my living room, and my flat's, you know, it's not... I wouldn't say it's particularly damp, but it's not. It's a basement flat, so I think that they have lasted a long time, and they feel great to play. They feel as nice as regular Slinkies, but they've got all these added benefits. So
I'm not having any problems with Power Slinkies. I don't know why there's a product to compete with a product that's the most popular product in the world.
This is the funny thing, right? So I used Balanced Tensions for ages, and then I got sent some strings from String Joy, which I've used for ages, and I wanted to change strings on my Valentine, but I'd run out. My mate gave me a set of Rotor Sounds, and I was like, put those on. And I was like, actually, a string's just strings, and I'm being an idiot.
Oh, I can't go along with that.
No, I
because I can't use
well.
Rotor Sounds.
I put them on, and I was like, these sound really good. And yeah. I'm like, but then I'd only change my guitar strings once every 6 months, and they don't actually. I never break guitar strings, and I never rust guitar strings.
I'd be interested to get some feedback from people that are using these paradigms out in the wild. People that break strings all the time, because I tend not
how
to.
How are they different to the Elixirs, though, in terms of, like, do they still rust? Or
they're not. My understanding with these is it's not a coating. It's a way that the
string
core,
is
it's the way
made.
That the core is,
but
the it, core of the string is
but
put
so
together.
Does that mean the winding can still come undone?
No, so they are... they're protected against all of those things,
right.
Supposedly. This is the claim. And to be fair, like I said, I've had no corrosion on there. I haven't broken one. I've had no windings break at the bridge or anything like that. And I've used it a fair amount. So the experiment that I've done with it, it's all worked very, very well. How much are they per set?
$18.99,
which is expensive for a set of guitar strings, I guess. What's a regular set of Ernie Ball?
£6. Well, £5. Yes.
Yeah. So there is a premium on there. I think what we need to do is weigh up whether it's worth it.
I think the thing is that people maybe. I mean, I guess it's designed to stop people who gig regularly changing their strings all the time, but people who like fresh strings are probably still going to want to put fresh strings on, right?
Yeah. I mean, I always, when I was behind the till in the shop, whenever people come in and say, look, I always buy regular Slinkies or I always buy Super Slinkies. Is there anything else I should be getting instead? I'd always recommend trying something different. And that, my opinion has never changed. I would say if something like this comes out and you're interested, give it a go.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, how much extra? Yeah, okay, fine. These are 18 quid rather than 5 quid. If you are constantly going into a guitar shop and buying your strings from the same people, they will probably do you a deal on a set of strings that is something new for you to try.
Yeah.
That comes down to the benefits of always dealing with a guitar shop as opposed to just, you know, maybe always dealing online. Obviously different people are in different situations, but if you can build up a relationship with someone, I always think it's worth trying to do because you will get those benefits.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've mentioned it already in an earlier podcast, but on this list is the Moor Radar. Now, this is in a pedal format, but as we said, it's not really a pedal as such. It's a cab modelling pedal, but because it doesn't, I think the way that we've always kind of done this is if you can't really use it on its own. So this, for example, you can't just plug a guitar straight into this. It has to go into a preamp to...
Well, actually, you can plug a guitar straight in, but I think because it's got some power amp models, but you need a preamp model to actually like give you a shape.
Sure, exactly. So I think this is an accessory. It's like an add-on to a pedal board.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a pedal. So, Matt, tell us about the Radar.
So basically, micro pedal cab simulator with 30 different speaker cab models, 11 different mics, 4 different power amps, completely customizable EQ, totally capable of plugging in your own IRs as well, which is something that you can even do on the Helix. You can load in your own impulse responses, 36 user presets, PC editor, and it supports headphone and line out, which I think is the key because you can put it at the end of your board and if you just want to hear
plug
some headphones in.
I might get one of these, you know. I was just thinking about
that. I don't think they're tons of money, if I remember rightly. They're £110.
Okay.
The cool thing is it's basically got a smaller version of the GE200 screen on it, so it's a full colour screen that's an easy to use menu. The button also works as the control knob that you can cycle through the menu.
Oh yeah, so it does.
And you can basically load in your own IRs, like I said. So if you've got IRs that you really like from say your Helix, but you're putting together a micro board to travel abroad and you still want the same impulse responses, you can just load them into this.
Yeah, this is a neat product.
It's a really cool product.
Definitely.
I was thinking, like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, is there any way I can utilize something like that? But the thing is, you wouldn't plug it into a cab because it's a cab simulator, so it's designed to go into a PA or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just thought that is a cool product for recording or.
Definitely. Definitely.
Or just putting together a tiny board and you just want to hear it through headphones.
Well, I guess, you know, consider what we've been using, which is the Two Notes Torpedo Cab, which is £300-something.
Or you take something like, I mean, this is a fairly radical setup, but it's still not going to cost you tons of money. If you bought something like the DV Mark Raw Dog because you want that power, it's got the preamp output. So if you're like, well, I want the preamp, the really simple preamp, but I want to go into something much lower powered for recording or for headphones.
Yeah,
and you've got a ton of different cab models.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you had a Class D based amp or solid state amp, you could use the preamp from that into this and then out into headphones.
Yeah,
that's a neat little thing. Yeah, I'm into it. One last thing on here: the Soundbrenner Pulse
finally.
Wearable.
Yeah. Finally, oh, I'm so annoyed when we started this and I saw it at the bottom of the list. I'm so excited about this product.
I don't even know what this is. Tell me what this is.
Okay, fine. Right, so. This is actually a great accessory product. So the Soundbrenner Pulse is a watch-like metronome that vibrates. So it's a vibrating metronome. Because, of course, you don't need to hear it. You can feel it whilst you play. And sort of scientifically, there's supposed to be... It's supposed to be easier for you to keep perfect time with the sense of feeling than it is audibly. Anyway, it's a cracking product. When me and Mary Spender got to GitCon, the first person we met to get a lift to the place, which was like a couple of hour drive when we got to Germany, was Colin from CS Guitars.
Yeah.
And he had one of these on his wrist, and I had no idea like what it was. I was, and you know, you're sort of meeting people and making friends. I was like, that is a very strange watch. And it wasn't. It was his metronome, and he showed me how to use it. It was great because you can set the tempo either by simply tapping the watch on your wrist or by rotating it, but also crucially it comes with an app, a smartphone app. You can also
you can set the tempo,
but you can sync it through doors as well.
Okay,
like if you want to use it for recording, and I think that's where it becomes an actually really usable tool.
So you can use it as a click in the studio.
So you don't have to worry about click bleed on headphones, and you don't have to wear headphones.
I mean you could use it live. If you wanted to all be in sync but not use IEMs.
And that's the other thing.
Yeah.
You can sync up to five of these together via Bluetooth. So full bands or orchestras can play using this together without having the problem of audio. I think that's wicked. What a fantastic...
I really like that you can buy a body strap. So if you're a drummer and you don't want to wear it on your wrist because your wrist's moving all the time, you can actually strap it to your chest and then place it wherever you feel most comfortable or where you feel the vibration more to get a better feeling of it.
Exactly.
I think it's...
It's great.
And it's not stupid money.
It's £80, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, it's $99.
But it's unique. It's something new. It's different. But I think it actually is dealing with something to make it better. Dealing with the concept of metronomes and making it
I'm
better.
I'm into this in a big way.
Yeah, when you're fantastic. Practicing to a metronome and you're looking at that needle, I think you focus so much on the visual side of it. And you also then try and focus on the audio side of it, that I think it does put you off. Where if you can just feel it and you can sit there, it's almost like jamming to a Beat Buddy or a backing track.
And listeners, if you are interested in checking it out, Colin from CS Guitars has a really great sort of demo video of it on his channel. And I believe, because he obviously, other than his very successful YouTube channel, he makes guitars. I think he's got a deal with Soundbrenner at the moment, so I think you can type CS Guitars into Soundbrenner's website and get a discount on the metronomes as well. So
there we go.
Yeah, they are pretty cool.
So shall we break this list down, because there's seven things in this list. There's two things that we need to cut. What would we like to cut out of that list? Is there anything obvious that we want to cut?
I would say, because maybe it's not totally refined as a sellable in-store product yet, maybe the soldless power cables.
Okay, interesting.
I think they're really cool, but I just...
But is there anything competing with that? Maybe not.
Yeah,
Maybe because I wouldn't necessarily... I think they're... And you could say... I guess I could say the same thing about the Boss Patch cables. There's a lot of other great Boss Patch... I mean, they're...
There's a lot of other great Boss products out there that you could be buying.
And there's a lot of soldless patch cables, and it's very difficult to kind of... You know, some people are just very set on the ones they want. I definitely go and... They're worth going and trying out. But in terms of other products in here...
I mean, I would instantly knock off the Dodaro pedal tuner. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's
not as good as...
It's not...
The other two, the big two.
Yeah.
It was a great product. It's incredibly... It's a tough marketplace,
and I don't think it's better.
It's 65.
It's the same money. I think as much as I loved it, I would still go TC for the display, and I'd still go Boss
Korg for the...
Boss for trusting that it would never break.
The classic Korg D10. D10 RW Rosewood. Yeah. Like £190.
Yeah. Do you know my guitarist's TU2 recently broke.
What?
And I know. And I got him a TU3. He's owned the TU2 like since whenever. Probably bought it when it first came out, sort of thing. And he sort of gave it to me like with a load of other crap. And I was like, God, I think I might have to like get this framed or something, like a broken TU2. That's got to be... How many broken TU2s can there be?
You send it off for a prize.
I spent New Year's hanging out with my friend.
I don't believe it.
My friend infrequent podcast guest Ed McNulty from the band Beach Slang. Him and the guitar player in Beach Slang, Aurora, and they recently, whilst they were on tour, they had their van broken into and they had loads of their stuff nicked. And Aurora was saying that she had her TU2 nicked, and she bought TU3 and is trying to find a second-hand TU2.
I don't understand this. I've seen people say this in the past.
That's what I said as well. I don't understand it.
It's not actually. The TU3 is a far superior.
I completely. Yeah, like, that's exactly what I said.
I understand people sort of claiming that sort of like mythical feel concept with pedals. Like,
it's a tuner.
Yeah, but yeah. It's a tuner.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can literally test how good it is.
So we only need to take one product off.
Yep.
The thing is, I like the Boss patch cable system more than I like the strings.
I think as much as I really like the Paradigm Slinkies, I agree that they're a lot of money and maybe they don't fit on this list.
A lot of people, but the thing is, as much as I personally think it's a little bit of snake oil, that doesn't seem to be public opinion. Like, everyone is shifting over to Paradigm.
Completely. I just think I like all the other stuff on here more than I like the Paradigm Slinkies.
I'm never going to wear a metronome.
Oh, yeah, but
I'm never going to wear a metronome.
No, but it's not just for.
Yeah, but I'm not either. I'm probably never going to practice. But in terms of an amazing accessory, for modern musicians,
I might get one. I'm going to buy one.
So
now.
Rarely,
I'm going to buy one whilst we podcast.
So rarely did we ever get asked about metronomes whilst working.
But
in a
shop. I don't think this is for just a regular guitar shop thing. I think this is something that
musicians.
Bands that might, you know, be touring that don't wear IEMs. I can see people doing this.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think this as well, working in guitar shop.
I could only get it from Toman.
I think the thing is as well is that maybe, maybe not, but the real serious hardcore people who practice a lot, who make their life out of being a musician rather than being more of a casual musician.
Is that who listens to this podcast?
No, but it's not necessarily about who listens to this podcast. It's about the best accessory this year.
Yeah, I mean,
it's totally different to anything else on this list as well.
I'm inclined to agree. I think the Paradigm strings are really good. I think that they've I've had really good results with them. But I understand that they're a lot of money. And would I recommend to someone just walking in, like, you have to buy these over a set of regular slinkies? Probably not. Whereas
no, of course not. No. I feel to be honest with you, I feel quite uninspired by all of the selections.
I feel the opposite of that.
See, I actually think it's some of the best accessories we've had.
Yeah,
I don't. I mean, are any of these products this time next year going to be in the top five of 2018's best gear of 2017?
Barefoot Buttons did come out nowhere. But
That's what I'm saying.
But we wouldn't have said that about Barefoot Buttons last year.
Yeah. No. But that's the point. You're supposed to grow from these.
We won't know unless we give it the award. Next year, we'll all be sitting around this table wearing Soundbrenner pulses.
That Octopus multi-tool, I think, is incredible.
I think that's a good shout.
With something like the Soundbrenner, how long is it going to take for someone like Apple to basically just go, why don't we just make an app?
Is there haptic feedback in the watch? Because if there is, you could just do it with the watch.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that's another thing. I think the things on here that are guaranteed for me are the Octopus multi-tool. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, sure.
I thought it was very cool.
The Moore radar, I think we should.
Yeah, I thought it was a great product.
I think the solderless power cables solve a problem that no one else is.
Lock in the pulse if you're going to lock in some power cables.
But I mean,
the power cables are the most interesting thing on that list, without a doubt, for me.
See, now I like them, but I just say the product's made. Actually, the product is finished. I just think they need to refine how you can buy them.
Agreed. But that's fine.
But then again, you're doing something different. It's doing something unique, and that's what the metronome's doing as well.
For me, it's between the Paradigm Slinkies and the Boss solderless patch cables.
To go or to stay?
To go. Because I think the metronome should be on this list.
I'd rather the Slinkies go. Because once again, I can't see myself selling a set of those strings.
I think it's two sides of the same coin. It's a company doing. Yeah. Actually, I think if anything, probably the. I suppose they both do two different things. I mean, Ernie Ball is a different type of string. Mm-hmm. The Boss patch cables are. There's a lot of companies that do solderless patch cables, but if, as what Matt's saying, you can go from angled, you can do angled or straight. That does solve a problem mm-hmm. for you know, the people who've bought ES8s and Gig Rig switching systems and Karl Martin Octa switches and stuff like that. So yeah, for sure, I understand that, but I can see that, I can see the benefit in both. Well, for me, the one out of those that needs to go is the Pulse. So I'll sort of,
no,
but that's fine. That's fine.
I would say I really like both the Paradigms and the Soldless. And whilst I'm happy for us to pick one, just in sort of defence of them, yeah, I agree it's another Soldless kit, but it'll be the first Soldless kit that's actually good, that's made by a major brand.
No, the Daddario one was good.
The Daddario one wasn't.
No, it
didn't fit in ES8s. I had to take mine back. Didn't fit in an MS3. Didn't fit in the most popular...
Fit how?
No, the Daddario ones with the massive Planet Waves, huge chunky
end pieces. I bought a set of those because I was like, do you know why I don't use those George L ones? Because I can't be bothered to buy stuff that I can't get through work, and they're a mini company. So I want to buy patch cables that are from a major brand. I mean, no one has done, like, no major brand has done solderless kits until now, and I think this is a game changer because I think you have to know about George L to get George L cables. And I don't think anyone knows about it.
This is the thing about Boss, is that realistically the reason so many professionals use Boss is because you can go into any store in the world
and get them. Yeah,
and
get
it. And I guess that's the thing, if you move over to Boss solderless patch cables, basically you can probably go into any store
and get them.
I think we leave the Boss cables on. I think take the Slinkies off. They're really a great addition to the Slinky family. But realistically, you know, even if they are markedly better than just a regular Slinky, how much better are they than, like, the Titaniums and the what was the other, Cobalts?
Yeah.
Is it that much different?
But it's not just that. They're definitely better for Ernie Ball. But I do think there are, like, as soon as you're getting into this territory, like, there are other companies that are doing strings aimed at this. Like, you could look at, like, GHS and, like, more sort of boutique premium companies that are making,
like,
strings.
Stringjoy, you know, have a completely custom set made up for
about the
same money.
This isn't new. It's just new for Ernie Ball, who are a budget string company.
Right. We need to rank these, and then we need to have a break, and then we move on to tomorrow's final. So, what are we saying, number five on this list? I think it's got to be the Boss kit, right? Because that's the one we ummed and ahed about the most. Number four, what are we...
I would say the power cables.
Power cables.
Yeah, I think so too. Jay, are we...
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know what I think should be next, but that's fine.
Should we then go with the metronome? Because that's
really
the one...
No, I think
the metronome's the best thing.
I think it's the best accessory to come out this year.
It's the only thing that's actually like a true accessory.
I think the radar definitely, for me, the radar should be number one, because I think at least two of us on this table are like...
But it's not really an accessory.
But I think it is in the way that we define it.
Is it a pedal?
Cab. Sim.
2018's gear of the year, the cab sim category. Yeah,
I think for the purposes of this gear of the year, this needs to live in best accessory, because it is a pedal, but it's not generating its own sound. You need to have other things. This is something that you could tag onto a pedal board or a rig. It's an accessory to those things. Yeah. It's not a pedal itself. Personally, I think, I mean, I'm happy with the Octopus Multi-Tool going third. I'm happy for that. I don't mind.
I don't understand how you guys are getting so excited about a wearable metronome. I think that is...
It's like a great accessory.
That's so boring.
But I was shown it and
how
introduced
many times have you
to it.
Ever in your life practiced a metronome?
Well, exactly.
And someone who is punk rock, you don't even record to metronomes. But to a wide range of musicians who want to sort of improve their technicality, I think this is a usable
and
tool.
And they're pitching it to session musicians, so they're not playing to a click. So I think it's like we just physically won't see the bigger picture because it's not something we're ever going to use. But I think as a whole, I think it's a...
I can stand behind it being at number two. I don't think I can stand behind it being at number one. I think the radar...
Jay thinks it's a literal number two.
Well, yeah. I think that for me, the radar has to win. How would you feel about... We do the Boss patch cables at number five, three monkeys soldiers...
Monkeys.
It's been a long day. Three monkeys soldless power cables at four. Nomad Music Octopus...
What was that movie with Bruce Willis in?
Oh, 12 Die Hard.
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys.
The Nomad Music Octopus Multi-Tool at 3, the Soundbrenner Pulse Wearable Metronome at 2, and the Moore Radar at 1. How do we feel about that as the lineup for best accessories?
Listen, if everyone else thinks that the metronome should be number one.
I don't think it should be number one. Okay. I think the Moore should be number one.
We think it should be number one.
If you two think it should.
But you think it should be number five and you think it should be number two. And I think that weighs it up enough for us to put it at two.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, well, there we go. The best accessory rundown of 2017.
Wait, can we keep going on about the metronome? Because I think Jay's getting really annoyed.
I'm at home. I don't think we can do this all night as far as I'm concerned.
I am literally buying one right now.
Number five, Boss Patch Cable Solderless System. Number four, the Three Monkeys Solderless Power Cables. The Nomad Music Octopus Multi-Tool. At two, the Soundbrenner Pulse Wearable Metronome. Have you really just bought one?
I just hit buy now.
And at number one, the Moore Radar Cab Sim pedal. What a day it's been. It seems like today's been the longest one, and actually I think it might. This isn't the longest one, but it feels like the longest one. Join us tomorrow when we run down
the final.
I'm going to put the last two things in
2017.
Here. So,
what will win?
The possible things that could win 2017's Gear of the Year are the Epiphone SL, the Tate FX Brexit, the Orange Rocker 32, the. Tate Brexit in there?
Because it was number two on the
listener's choice.
It
was two on the listener's choice. Okay.
What happened to all the ones in number one?
They're underneath because the way I've copied it in. So Epiphone SL, Les Paul SL, the Tate FX Brexit, the Orange Rocker 32, the Echoline Everest Drive, the Fender Offset Mustang Bass, the Ernie Ball Sterling, Music Man Sterling Valentine, the Boss MS3, the EVH 5153 15-watt LBX2, the Electroharmonic Canyon, the Yamaha BB734A, the Moore Radar, and the Soundbrenner Pulse Wearable Metronome. Woo! Join us tomorrow. All of those will go into a showdown, and that we will judge three of them as our bronze, silver, and gold winners for 2017. See you tomorrow. Blimey.
Good Lord.
Bye.
Cheers, gang.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.